From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
The governor says he'll follow through on his threat to investigate the legislature under the state's Moreland Act. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on that, the end of the session, and some of the governor's successes and potential failures, and will examine the value of a community college education in the state. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Here, Governor Cuomo, frustrated by what he says is the failure of the legislature to agree to a reform package, says he'll follow through with a threat to investigate the legislature using special powers given to him under the state's Moreland Act. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt looks at the potential findings as well as the limitations of a probe.
Governor Cuomo says he did not want to compromise on a reform package that includes public campaign financing as well as new prosecutorial powers for the state's DAs to root out public corruption. Cuomo says he will instead use powers under the state's 106-year-old Moreland Act to look at campaign contribution filings at the state's Board of Elections, where he believes patterns of corruption and fraud may exist.
Follow the money. Where does the money come into the system? It comes in through the campaigns, through the Board of Elections.
The Moreland Act is named after Assemblyman Sherman Moreland, who was in office in 1907. He helped then-Governor Charles Hughes create a commission to investigate the governor's own insurance commissioner, who was believed to be corrupt. Because of its origins, though, some think there are limitations on how far a governor can take a probe, especially when the governor wants to investigate another branch of government. Richard Brodsky served in the state assembly for several decades. He's now a senior fellow at Demos and NYU's Wagner School. He says Cuomo's legal basis for using the Moreland Act to probe the legislature is, at best, uncertain, if not flat wrong.
It's specifically limited to investigations of the executive branch. It specifically and explicitly is not to be used to investigate the judiciary or the legislature. The wisdom of an investigation can be debated, but the legality of the situation is pretty clear. And if Governor Cuomo is going to advance this, he's going to have to find another way to do it.
Brodsky says one option for the governor would be to take on a partner like the state attorney general, who holds more investigatory powers. But the governor says he thinks he's found a way around the Moreland Act's limitations. He says by focusing on the Board of Elections, which is part of the executive branch, he's found a back way in to examine campaign donations to legislators. He says the campaign filings at the board are a portal into everything.
Board of Elections is an executive agency. I have total authority with the Board of Elections, so we can have an investigations committee through the Board of Elections.
Bill Mahoney with the New York Public Interest Research Group has spent years analyzing campaign filings at the State Board of Elections. He says there's plenty there to examine. Mahoney recently finished a study that found over 100,000 violations of the current campaign finance laws in filings at the Board of Elections in the past 2 years alone.
I would guess that the vast majority of them are just simple mistakes by the campaign treasurers, but it's likely that there's a few of them in there that are masking bigger things, like trying to hide who really gave a candidate money.
Or even worse, he says.
It's possible they could find more direct bribery or something like that by legislators, by lobbyists admitting that, hey, this legislator wanted us to give him campaign contributions in exchange for voting a certain way on a bill.
Legal questions aside, Brodsky, the former assemblyman, says he's not sure that investigating the legislature just because it refused to sign on to a bill is a good precedent to set.
The government is talking about this because the legislature did not do what he asked them to do with respect to an ethics and election reform package. I'm not sure that the Constitution contemplates gubernatorial investigations when legislation doesn't pass. If there's a need for an investigation, it exists whether or not reform laws are passed.
Mahoney with NYPERC says a Moreland Act probe is at best only a temporary solution to the ongoing corruption at the state capitol. He says ultimately the State Board of Elections need to be restructured to end the present gridlock between the two major political parties, and he says the board must stop being a toothless tiger and start actually following up on the countless campaign violations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, something interesting this week. The governor has threatened it, and now it seems like he'll follow through, and that is a Moreland Act commission to deal with corruption.
That's right, David. He had duked it out with the legislature. People are just disgusted. You got Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, up there talking about more indictments possibly coming, a culture of corruption. He knows that he is tied to the idea of cleaning it up. And if he can't clean it up, and if the legislature won't help him, then he is using the ultimate weapon, which is something allowed under the statutes called the Moreland Act Commission. That means he can go and investigate. They can go and investigate, and clearly they will turn over a great deal of dirt. I have no doubt about it, if he really wants them to do their job. Now, of course, there's a real question as to whether or not he really wants this, but he certainly has to appear to want it. And what's going to happen is that the legislature is not going to be friendly, and any deals he wants with them will, of course, be hampered by the fact that he's sending this Moreland Act Commission after them. So it is going to be a calculated risk on Cuomo's part, and if this Moreland Act Commission really comes up with dirt, then you might see a tremendous movement for change.
As the end of session this week wraps up, we see two victories for the governor's agenda upstate, which is casinos and SUNY tax-free zones. You want to deal with those two?
Sure. The casinos are important. At least they're important to show for Cuomo that he cares about upstate, where he is weakest. And he, of course, took quite a dive in the polls after the SAFE Act, the Gun Control Act. Now he has to get some of that back. He's always known from the very beginning that upstate really counts. So by saying that he wants to have these casinos and to have this help him fill the state coffers, you know, is a good idea. However, there are other states which are finding that there are reverses in the gambling. There's just so much. New Yorkers can go in three different directions or four different directions to gamble. There's also, of course, the illegal gambling that always goes on where the state doesn't take a share. This is going to be a signature for him to show that he cares about upstate. You've got the Indian casinos. He's made a deal with them in which they are giving substantial amounts of money to the state in return for being left alone and not being harassed in any way. And so you now have a sweet situation for the governor. He does get a victory here.
And to the SUNY tax-free zone plan, which is now called Start Up New York.
Yeah. As you know, the governor came up with a plan. He was going to take SUNY campuses. He was going to allow people from businesses that are recruited to work in these start-up businesses to avoid taxes for a long time. This got a lot of people angry because there are an awful lot of people who say, hey, if they're not paying taxes, then I'm going to have to make that up. There was a substantial pushback on this one. But he does get his way, and he made a deal with the New York City legislators to say that if CUNY, that's the City University of New York, districts were endangered economic areas, that they would count too. So now you have not only upstate districts where people get tax-free, to work tax-free, but now you have some places in the city also. This is kind of reminiscent of the old Pataki economic zones in which he tried to do much the same thing. It ended up as a disaster, and the legislature, of course, wanted nothing to do with it. So now you have Cuomo doing something like it, although I'm sure he would deny that. And the proof is in the pudding. We'll have to see how that all comes out.
Finally, to probably one of the biggest pieces of the governor's agenda, the Women's Equality Act. No problem in the Assembly, but a problem in the Senate.
Well, senators are scared to death that they're going to face primaries from right-wing Republicans, much like their colleagues did after they voted for the Marriage Equality Act, the Gay Marriage Act. And there's no question that because of the way the districts have been configured and the rest, that they face a tremendous uphill battle if they vote for abortion or for increased or stabilized abortion rates in New York State, or the perception that there are any of those things. The Conservative Party, Mike Long, has said, hey, no question about it, we're going to run primary opponents against you, just like we did in the gay marriage situation, and we're going to get you if you vote for this thing. So Skelos, being the leader, has to protect them and has to say, okay, I'm not going to bring this bill up. But if you remember, David and everybody else, after the election, we found out that women had deserted the Republican Party in droves, and they're going to desert again here. So this leaves the Republican Conference, which, after all, has fewer members than the total number of Democrats. This leaves them between a rock and a hard place, and you had better believe that there's some real sweating going on. I think it all comes down to this, David. New York is a blue state more and more. Even with the gerrymandering and the fixing of the legislative districts, the Republicans are having a hard time to sustain themselves. There are many of us who believe that the governor wants the Republican Party to be in control of the Senate. That way they get to be the meanies, and he gets to say, well, I was for this, but they wouldn't let me have it. His father had that. He would have it. He has it, too. And right now, it's real dubious whether the Republicans could continue to pull this kind of thing in which they're the minority, but they act like the majority.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Before wrapping up its business for the session, the New York State Legislature has acted upon a number of agency nominations. This week, the Senate confirmed two new Adirondack Park Agency board members and renewed the terms of others. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Adirondack Park Agency's chairwoman was approved by the state Senate for a second term on Wednesday afternoon. Lonnie Ulrich was first appointed to the APA board in 2004, and in 2011 became the first woman to lead the agency. The Senate also acted on nominations for new and returning members of the Adirondack Land Use Regulatory Agency. It approved the reappointments of Arthur Lucy of Lake Placid and William Thomas of Johnsburg. The two new individuals nominated by Governor Andrew Cuomo were approved to replace outgoing board members. Karen Feldman of Hudson will fill an out-of-park seat replacing Cecil Ray. She is an attorney with ties to the Adirondacks. Her partner is president of the Adirondack Landowners Association, and they own land in Scroon Lake. Dan Wilt fills the in-park seat being vacated by Frank Mazzano, a member of the North Country Regional Economic Development Council and owner of a scientific glass-blowing company in Lake Pleasant. Wilt says he sought the position on the board.
I've lived in the Adirondacks as a full-time resident since 1979. I've spent most of my life here in the Adirondack Park, all weekends and summers as I was a kid. I couldn't think of a better place to live. The rules and regs of the park can enhance or limit the ability for people to operate small business or cottage business here within the park.
The Adirondack Council is welcoming the approval of the APA commissioners, according to spokesman John Sheehan.
We're happy to see the two new nominees. We think that they have good background for the Park Agency's Board of Commissioners, and that each of them is both interested and capable of following the law and following science, and that's what they'll do as commissioners. We were also happy to see the people who were reappointed come back. We were concerned, however, with the fact that Dick Booth was not given a new term.
Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer is critical of the newly approved Park Agency Board and its priorities.
This batch of commissioners are heavily weighted towards local government concerns, heavily weighted towards economic development concerns. There are not very long environmental resumes for any of the five in this batch of commissioners. So We feel that Governor Cuomo has taken a weak Adirondack Park Agency Board and made it even weaker.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe.
I understand some of the environmental groups see it as a softening of the board, but I don't really see it that way because they all have to follow the law, and the staff of the agency is heavily weighted towards environmental protection. There's over 50 staff, 50 of them are involved in environmental analysis and protection, and there's only one that's involved in the economy. So I think it'll be a balanced board.
New APA Commissioner Dan Wilt is, quote, 100% confident, unquote, that consideration of the park's economy and environment will be balanced.
We need to work together. What kind of a park would it be without year-round residents? We need to sit down and work together.
The APA board includes 5 in-park and 3 out-of-park seats chosen by the governor and a designee from the Secretary of State, Commissioner of Environmental Conservation, and Commissioner of the Department of Economic Development. Terms are generally 4 years. The next meeting is in August.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
As one upstate community college expands, the value of a community college education in New York is under scrutiny. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look.
Early this year, Schenectady County Community College announced its intent to install a new satellite community college campus in downtown Albany, with expectations that the new site will attract a larger geographic audience and mirror the success of the school's Center City campus. SCCC is partnering with Albany County, leasing 10,000 square feet on the second floor of the county's 112 State Street headquarters. Mary Rozak is Director of Communications for Albany County.
Schenectady County Community College will be open for business at 112 State Street, bringing students in, about 1,000 students, beginning with the spring semester of 2014.
Albany County officials believe the new SCCC satellite site will save the county money as more students opt to attend it over Hudson Valley Community College. The county is dangling a few carrots before prospective students, assuring them there won't be any parking worries and bus transportation will be available.
It will bring much-needed life as we've been continuing to breathe new life into downtown Albany, but new life for the businesses that are down here. If the students are coming down here and they're seeing what downtown Albany has to offer, that's going to help our businesses. It's going to help our entertainment venue, the Times Union Center and the Palace Theater.
Rozak says construction begins July 1st and should be completed in early December. Some wonder if the initiative is worth the effort. A study by the Manhattan-based Center for an Urban Future found just 35% of the students who enroll in community college graduate with an associate or bachelor's degree in 6 years. At Westchester Community College, the 6-year graduation rate stands at just 27%. SCCC has a better rate of 34%. At HVCC, the rate goes up to 39%. The report says community colleges are taken for granted by policymakers and continue to face enormous challenges in graduating students. Tom Hilliard is a senior fellow at the Center for an Urban Future.
Community colleges are, in a sense, a legacy system that takes students who have not been served well by other systems, by high school, by adults who've been in the workforce, but they have to make student success a top priority.
HVCC officials say they are not concerned about Albany County's partnership with SCCC, nor with the school's declining enrollment. HVCC President Drew Matinek is critical of the study. He tells WAMC graduation rates are only a piece of the success stories of community college students.
It does not refer to the transfer rate, where many of our students transfer before they get their degree. And it also does not account for students who might get employment, the desired employment, before they receive their degree. We had an honors student at Hudson Valley Community College, 4.0 grade point average, who transferred from Hudson Valley Community College to Cornell. Now, in reference to this study, that student would be considered a non-completer. a non-degree attainer.
HVCC has its own Albany Extension Center on Central Avenue. SCCC officials declined an invitation to comment on this story. SUNY officials did not respond to a request for comment in time for broadcast.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
A former Dutchess County executive died this week. She broke several barriers and, to this day, remains the county's only woman and Democratic County executive to have held the office. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has this reaction.
Lucille Patterson became Dutchess County executive in 1978 through a special election, after having served on the county legislature since 1973. The first woman Democratic county executive in the United States, Patterson was reelected for the next two terms, retiring in 1991. Mark Molinaro, a Republican, is the current Dutchess County executive.
In response to what was a really horrible corruption scheme that brought down the seated county executive, Lucille restored dignity, integrity, and decency to an office and to a county that was desperately seeking it.
Mary Ellen O'Dell is Putnam County executive. A Republican, she is the first woman to hold the office in Putnam, which neighbors Dutchess. She says it is hard to believe that her route to the county executive seat was a similar one to Patterson's.
I mean, how many times can you say that that's going to have the same story? The first woman county executive comes in to fill an unexpired term due to a corruption scandal.
O'Dell took office in November 2011 after former state senator Vincent Libel resigned before taking office following an investigation that led to his conviction on federal corruption charges. O'Dell did not know Patterson, but wishes she did.
I would have loved to have been able to talk to her about the challenges when it comes to, this is still very much a male-dominated business.
Again, here's Molinaro.
The young women who don't believe they can make a difference, she proved that in the 1970s and 1980s, you could do that. And if she could accomplish that then, any young woman can accomplish that today. And people like me ought to be encouraging and inspiring that among all of our young people. And Lucille, I think, should stand out for her service as a woman in what had historically been a man's world. And thank God she broke through that barrier.
Fran Knapp is Dutchess County's Democratic Elections Commissioner.
What really impressed me so much about Lucille was that she was just such a role model for other women entering politics. And at the time, there was a group of women who belonged to the League of Women Voters, and it was mostly Democrats, but they also had some Republican women as well. And it was just such a group of women that shared families and raised young children, but wanted to become politically active in their community. And Lucille really was a leader in that group.
Putnam County's O'Dell has a few questions she would like to have asked Patterson.
Well, I would have asked her how she found, at times in those quiet moments, how she found her inner strength, you know, when people were judging her and people were trying to intimidate her and taking the fact that she was a woman for granted, you know.
And here's the second one.
What she felt the biggest price was that she paid for her service to her constituents. If she felt at all that the reward outdrove the price that she probably paid for her personal sacrifices.
Both Knapp and Molinaro say Patterson excelled at reaching across the aisle and building relationships, which served her extremely well in a Republican-dominated arena. Patterson was awarded the Eleanor Roosevelt Valkill Medal in 1994 for her advocacy for children. Patterson was 77.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1325. Or listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.